Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Many Americans say their closest relationships feel a little too close lately after 4 months of largely staying at home. And mental health professionals say the pandemic does provide the perfect ingredients for relationship disaster. On top of being stuck together, there's fear around the virus itself, stress about the economic fallout, and disputes over what's safe and what isn't. Today in The Exchange, household dynamics. Let's hear from you. After months of enforced togetherness, how are you doing with the people you live with? Email us. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Tom Power, family relationship consultant based in Meredith, and author of Family Matters, A Layperson's Guide to Family Functioning, and Nicole Sublette, licensed mental health counselor at a private practice in Concord. Welcome to both of you. And Nicole, let's start with you. What are you hearing from people, Nicole, over and over again about what's causing them household friction right now?
Yes, thank you, Laura. So a lot of what I am hearing from people is just the reordering of household roles and routines and trying to strategize different ways of being, because everyone's home now, right? And so parents who might have been working are now on furlough or having to educate their children. So there's been a giant shift in dynamics and also kind of a lot of tension between who does what now.
So a reordering of sort of who does what, how the household is managed. Give us a couple examples. I think I can imagine some, but I'd love to hear them from you, Nicole.
Yes. So for example, one thing that I'm seeing is all on a financial basis, you know, households that generally have two incomes, the allocation of roles, for example, the household may be dependent on just one primary income while maybe the other person, you know, used to working a lot is now kind of at home, maybe doing more household chores or maybe responsible for providing for the children when they were typically out working most of the day. So that's one dynamic that I see.
And who, Nicole, seems to be causing your clients the most stress? Is it spouses? Is it kids? Is it roommate? What kind of instances are you hearing about over and over again?
I think it's you know, it's typically all of the above. I mean, everyone is in close quarters. And so I think there's frictions that permeate on all levels.
Tom, how about you? What are you hearing from your clients about who or what is causing household friction?
Yeah. Good morning, Laura. I think that family balance is something that we're in before the pandemic. And you could consider it maybe being like a pond, and it's very quiet and calm. And then the pandemic is like a boulder being tossed into the pond, and it's sending out ripples. Ripples that we didn't ask for. And that's another thing, because it is forced on us and we didn't have a choice really, people get their back up and want to fight it. And there's really no fighting this thing. This thing is here, we didn't choose it. And I think that and now we're looking at it in terms of the length of it. So I think we need to kind of accept what's happening and try to look for ways to create positive interactions.
Well, I definitely want to talk to you about that in a couple minutes, both of you. Tom, I'm interested in what Nicole says. household friction being caused by a reordering of who does what. People who used to be out working are maybe working from home or didn't, you know, or lost their jobs. Children who used to maybe be really busy doing sports or and other activities are just kind of around the house. What are you hearing about this reordering of who does what?
Yeah, well, see, one of the family life cycle stages is getting the children launched. And that means like you launch them heading towards college. Well, now that they're home and they've been home, they bring home that they didn't have any structure. No one told them anymore what time to come in. Nobody, they didn't have to ask for permission. They were on their own. Now these college students and even older kids who maybe were in the workforce who got laid off and have to come back home, they have so much freedom and they've had so much freedom. They're coming back into a family where you have adolescents where you still want a lot of structure. You want some more boundaries on your 17, 18 year olds than you need on your 24 year olds. Now, when they all come back and live in the same house and you see your brother staying out as long as he wants, and you want the same privilege, but you're not ready for that.
Right.
So it causes parents to have to make some, you know, renegotiate is what I like to call it. You need to renegotiate the rules as long as you're going to be under this roof.
You know, Nicole, I've seen lots of headlines about so-called pandemic divorces, studies from China that indicate the divorce rate went up during and after the pandemic. Is that a real thing, Nicole? Are you seeing that?
I am seeing that. I am definitely seeing more friction and all sorts of partnerships. And so what's happening is sometimes the underlying stressors that might have been existed, you know, kind of these stressors, you know, are now kind of exacerbated and magnified and kind of coming to the front of these relationships. Often what I hear from clients is I'm left at home and now I have nothing to do but to confront my thoughts and my emotions about what is going on with me and my relationships, because they feel, people are saying that it's really magnified now, because, you know, before you could, you know, maybe go out, you know, do things to distract, and there's a lot less distractions these days.
Wow, that's really interesting, Nicole. So the pandemic may be causing new relationship problems, or it may just be exacerbating existing problems. Is that what you're saying, Nicole?
Yes, I'm saying it's absolutely both. Yes.
How about you, Tom? What do you think about that?
No, relationships are usually under some sort of stress. I mean, and it doesn't take much more stress to kind of throw them out of balance. So I think if you're feeling upset, I think it's perfectly normal. If you're not feeling more stressed right now, then you must be hiding out somewhere, because this is just it's very normal to have stress right now and to feel overwhelmed. We don't see the stress in couples as you walk down the street. You don't see it in the supermarket. You know, you see the stress, the financial stress, when you look at the lines of people waiting for food. You say, oh my God, that's a stress. But the emotional stress that we're all under, you don't see that as clearly. And people generally in this business of helping people, they wait too long. They hold on to that stress before seeking help or going to a mental health agency and saying, hey, look, I'm feeling a lot of stress. I want to talk to somebody. We wait till the last minute usually, because when you're interviewing somebody who's on the throes of getting divorced, you say, well, how long have you had this problem? And invariably, Laura, it's years. It's like 3 years, 5 years. They'll go back to an event. Like, I expect people years down the road to say, well, you know, when the pandemic hit, we weren't doing so well to begin with, but that just threw us off course. And if you get thrown off course, you want to get back on course. You don't want to stay the wrong course for a couple of years. And I just think people wait too long to get help. And it's not easy to ask for help, but it's really important to do it early on. Some type of prevention, you know, hey, am I going in the right direction? My kids have just come home from college. I don't know how to manage them. Get somebody to talk to somebody about it who's trained and knows the dynamics.
Jump in early then, you're saying, Tom. Recognize the problem and jump in early.
Early intervention, absolutely.
Nicole, have you been seeing a lot more clients given the expansion of telehealth? I have heard from some mental health professionals that telehealth has expanded opportunities for them to reach out to more people.
Absolutely. It makes therapy and treatment much more accessible. For example, people who have disabilities or, transportation is an issue, or even just down to simple time management and navigation, telehealth really can help people. It accesses people wherever they're at. So it's really wonderful. Even people who, were working and now can actually, I've spoken to clients even on their lunch breaks, whereas before doing a lot of office-based care, people would have to travel, come to the office and meet, which takes big chunks out of their day. But telehealth just makes it far more accessible.
That's interesting. People coming to you on their lunch break because they can do it over the phone or online. What would you say to someone, Nicole, who says, look, of course my kids are annoying me. Of course my spouse is, annoying me, but it's a pandemic. We're all stuck together. It's not that big a deal. I don't need a mental health professional to help me with this. I ask you because I'm struck by what Tom says about don't let items go unattended. So what would you say to that person, Nicole?
Well, I would, first of all, they're seeing me for a reason. They're reaching out. So what is the goal that we're working for? And I think prevention is key. And we also want to look at how things are kind of manifesting, because stress manifests in different ways. It could be down to eating habits. It could be down to maybe drinking a little bit more, or the desire to maybe not get out of bed, or kind of having this kind of underlying hypervigilance or anxiety. So things manifest differently, and we don't always link it necessarily to stress. And sometimes we don't always catch what's going on. And so we work together on kind of discovering what is going on, what do you want to make better for yourself, looking at why you are here. In meeting with me.
That's Nicole Sublette. She's a licensed mental health counselor to private practice in Concord. We're also talking this hour with Tom Power, a family relationship consultant based in Meredith, author of Family Matters, A Layperson's Guide to Family Functioning. And Exchange listeners, it's time for you to join us. We'd love to hear from you. What's it been like for you to spend so much time with members of your household, your partner, spouse, roommates, children? Call in at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Use Facebook or email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Also a reminder that for today, we're not talking about child abuse or domestic violence. We have covered those very important topics and we'll do so again. And if you are experiencing abuse, you can call the 24-hour domestic violence hotline at 866-644-3574. So both of you, we've been talking about the stresses. We're all together. We're all getting annoyed by those habits. Have you heard, Nicole, from anyone that there has been a silver relationship lining from all this?
Absolutely. And I've heard it a lot of times contextually coming from families. I was speaking with this one woman about how COVID-19 has impacted her family. And she had shared with me her teenage daughter is home from college, and that for the first time in several years, they pulled out board games. So there's been actually a lot of increased connectivity between families I have seen. And so it's really shifting the way that families interact, and they're finding that they're able to connect more because they're able to spend time together. And they're actually really kind of diving in and honoring the experience because they know that they might not have this time, especially with children who are getting older. And as Tommy talked about launching off, they might not get it. So it's kind of like a second chance almost to kind of have that extra special time. And even families with, you know, younger children are having to school them, really seeing that, you know, development of younger children growing, being able to be at home and school them and, you know, kind of being with children as they get their milestones, whether it's like learning to read or understanding shapes and colors. So there's been a lot more connectivity as well as stress.
What do you think, Tom?
Well, I think practicing gratefulness is a terrific thing to do at a time like this. You're under stress. That's just a given. But if you can just see your kids and say, God, I'm grateful that I have a son. He's driving me crazy right now, but I'm grateful that I have a son. You know, when you get out of bed in the morning, you could be grateful that you're alive and grateful that you're able to walk to the bathroom. All of these things that we do and we take for granted. Gratefulness is a great practice, and it's just something that you have to try to remember, that these kids are around now more than ever, and your mate is around more than ever. And there's something grateful about that. If you just stop and think about that, just think of one thing that you're grateful about the person before you interact with them.
You know, speaking of that, Tom, you wrote in a column for the Laconia Daily Sun recently saying that with kids, and this gets to what you just said, try reframing the way you see it. So instead of thinking, I'm quoting you, Tom, instead of thinking my daughter is a complainer, you suggested thinking, wow, she's really developing her voice. And I have to tell you, Tom, I laughed out loud when I read that because it's true, but boy, it's easier said than done.
Oh, it really is. I mean, I think I have good tips for people, but they're never easy because whatever's happening, is a tug of war usually between two people. And the only way to solve it is for you to look at your end of the rope on this tug of war. And you need, as the parent or the adult, to let go of the rope and not be in the tug of war anymore, because nobody's going to win that. So when you reframe it and say, oh boy, my daughter is gaining her voice. You can also say to yourself quietly, too bad she's practicing it on me, but I want her to have a voice. So if you can reframe some of those negative reactions, it's so much easier to deal with the person.
Well, you know, like, go ahead, Tom. Yeah.
No, if you have an older child, you want them to stand up to you in a respectful way because they're going to have to do that in the world. So it's not because they stand up and disagree with you. You want that dialogue. You just want it to be respectful.
I need to jump in here for just a moment and remind listeners that we'd love to hear from you. Tell us your stories of pandemic household dynamics, and we'll hear from you in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, household dynamics. After months of enforced togetherness, how are you doing with the people you live with? Email us. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in at 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Tom Power, family relationship consultant based in Meredith, author of Family Matters, A Layperson's Guide to Family Functioning, and Nicole Sublette, licensed mental health counselor in private practice in Concord. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Nicole, what extra household and relationship stresses are you hearing about from Black Americans? given the times that we're living in, given the attention to systemic racism in this country?
Yes. Yeah, so a lot of what is going on that I'm hearing with my clients of color is societal issues going on, police brutality. And also I'm seeing a little bit of vicarious trauma, as the images that are portrayed can be very graphic. And so what I'm seeing is heightened anxiety, increased experiences of depression, concern for family members. Also, what's coming to the forefront is a lot of parents having to navigate the talk about race with their children, or preparing their children for the potential of some really scary events. And so there's been a lot of, how do I prep my son or daughter for a society that might not treat them so kindly? So I'm seeing a lot of anxiety, increased incidences of depression, as I said, just kind of hypervigilance to surroundings.
Wow. So on top of the pandemic, there's that. How does that vicarious trauma affect family relationships between, you know, partners, spouses, children, and so forth?
What I'm seeing is increased levels of stress. So maybe there might be increased arguments. It manifests a lot in insomnia. So poor sleep. And, you know, when you have poor sleep, that can absolutely impact everything. Fearfulness for children, safety reasons, and then also racial reasons. And so it's kind of, it's like a sweater almost, and kind of like tethers are being kind of pulled. And so families are feeling kind of, even though they're coming together, there's a sense of scattering and a sense of fragmentation that is going on. And so how can they become resilient when there seems to be a lot of factors working against them, whether it be health factors of COVID-19 or just kind of racial stressors and pressures?
Roughly what percent do you know, Nicole, of mental health clinicians are Black, so that people who are facing these additional stresses can have someone to talk to who they feel can at least relate to what they're going through?
So nationwide, it's about 4% of people of color that are in the psychotherapeutic fields. I did my own research getting into private practice, being a person of color myself, and I think I was one of three in private practice. And I know there are some clinicians in community mental health centers that are of color, but it is such a small percentage of us, especially in New Hampshire. It's even lower, I'm sure, than 4%.
Wow, 4%. I'm really struck by that.
Yes. Yes. And so it's really, it's becoming, it's a crisis upon a crisis. We have the pandemic, and then, you know, incidences of race brutality, riots, protesting, and, you know, we're trying to, clinicians of color, we're kind of trying to catch all these balls, and it's really difficult to catch, and also to create these protective containers. And, you know, there's not a lot of us out there. So I'm hoping to create some trainings to work with other clinicians to maybe find ways to support people of color in this time and have some real talking points, understanding microaggressions, and also maybe having some anti-racist practices.
Let's go to our listeners, both of you. And again, Exchange listeners, we really want to hear from you this morning. What's happening among the different members of your household? Spouses, roommates, kids. After 4 months of being together, tell us how it's going with the people you live with. 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Tom and Nicole, let's go to Andrew in Franklin. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Hey, hi. Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I love the NPR. The silver lining, I think this question actually came up a few months ago, and I didn't really think of any silver lining, but I did actually, after a while, I realized that my son's almost 21, and I really, for me, the silver lining actually has been having him at home. I realized that, you know, he's at an age where that won't be lasting for very long. But the fact that he has been at home has been really good. It's good to see him, you know, and of course I love him. And it's also, I have a younger daughter who, you know, I like the fact that, you know, when I'm not home, you know, I mean, she's of age where she could watch herself, but she's 13. So I like the idea that when I'm not home, he's there too.
So what issues have come up or what conversations have you had, Andrew, with your son about, look, son, it's great having you home. I know you're used to being on your own, but here's what you need to pay attention to, given that there's a pandemic out there.
Well, I mean, our situation has been a little bit different. He's actually been working and been out, you know, in the public the whole time. Back in March, I actually started working home remotely, and with the incentive of unemployment, I was actually hoping that he would, at that time, get laid off, and then I felt like he'd be safer, you know, a little bit easier to quarantine, but that didn't happen. And now, actually, in light of that, I'm actually glad that he didn't get laid off, because I just know for myself, being where I'm at in my life, you know, I'm actually back at work now, and I'm grateful to be out of the house, even though I'm still wearing my mask and quarantining. But I think it would have been a lot harder for my son to stay home and just try to amuse himself. Maybe not, but I've just always been grateful that it kind of worked out the way it did.
Andrew, it's great to hear from you. And Tom, I wonder what you think about this call.
I think it's great to hear a father-son conversation. I mean, the pandemic may have been the impetus to have it happen, but I really like to work with grown children who already have their families, who are sad about not having a good relationship with a parent. They see that the parent is moving on and is not going to be around forever, and they have missed the chance to really have a chance to have a father-son conversation relationship. So the pandemic is forcing people closer together. And this may be a time to think about, you know, what type of a relationship do I now have? And is it the one I want? Or should I begin to express some of that open-hearted love that I have for a parent, or a child to a parent to a child, either way, because you're not going to have forever. This is a crisis, but a crisis breeds opportunity. And the opportunity may be, I want a better relationship with you. Let's go for it.
You know, Tom, I've heard a lot of friends say what you said, that this is an opportunity to reconnect with those, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds. I've also heard, though, about a lot of dishes in the sink, a lot of towels left on the bathroom floor. Do you know what I'm saying, Tom? What strategies do you recommend for families so that they can enjoy that older child who is home?
Yeah. For me, it depends upon what you want as a parent. I think you always are striving for some boundaries, some rules, and they're flexible. But I would be talking to a child who came home from college about, okay, what's your contribution now to the family? You're home, you're living here. I'm providing what I'm providing, but I'm trying to train you to be a self-provider. You're going to go out there in the world. This is not a place where you can get free lunch. This is not the attitude I would be trying to teach. I would be trying to teach responsibility and giving them an opportunity to serve and be part of helping out around the family, whether that's cutting the grass, doing some shopping. Why couldn't an adult child cook a meal? There's plenty of things they can do. And I think you just have to sit down, have a plan, and lay out what your expectations are. It doesn't mean they're going to meet them, but they ought to know, they ought to know what you expect. Because if you don't set any expectations, they're just going to do what they want, and that never leads to harmony.
Again, listeners, you can email us your stories, examples. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Tell us how it's going with the people you live with, spouses, roommates, kids. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Nicole, studies repeatedly show that women still shoulder more household chores, more childcare, even if they have jobs outside the home. Has the pandemic, Nicole, changed this or magnified it?
It really has shifted it. Previously, when I mentioned the reordering of roles, in some cases, it might be the woman who's actually, you know, maybe working from home or still going out and working, and it's the father who has to stay home and do a bit of the child caring and rearing. And so it's, I've definitely seen often a lot of role reversals since the pandemic, which has also caused some tension in these relationships, partnerships, marriages, how to navigate the new role.
How well do you think those family members who didn't provide most of these, you know, functions, shopping, cooking, cleaning, how much do you see them stepping up? And I'm not just talking about husbands. I'm talking about, you know, anyone, kids, wives, partners, roommates.
People are stepping up. People are stepping up to be able to navigate this because, you know, we're all in this together. And so it's, you know, I've actually seen increased efforts toward collaboration because it's about surviving. And as, you know, Tom talked about, you know, creating harmony and balance. And so people are having to work together to find a way. And sometimes in crisis can really pull out the best in people. I have seen it, you know, not sometimes we pull the words, but also there is that draw to pull out the best. And how can we do this together? How can we navigate it together? And it's really beautiful to witness.
Can you give me an example, Nicole? Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
No, I mean, women are terrific. I mean, they step up. They leave us guys, you know, we're looking around too much, you know? And I mean, I recently had the example of my wife having surgery. So there's like a 4-week, 6-week period where I get to see firsthand all the things that she does. And I don't think guys, I think we stand back and we wait. And particularly around household chores, we just need to step up. I mean, it's and if you're doing it, if you're a guy and you're doing it, your sons are going to see it, and if your son sees you doing it, that's the best way to teach him. It's not telling him later on, hey, you got to help out. You know, they learn what they live and what they see, and the best example that, you know, you can give a young man is to have his dad be very involved and take charge and help out.
Lots more to talk about after a short break. Coming up, we'll hear from you how the pandemic is affecting your closest relationships. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, pandemic household relations. How are you doing with the people you live with? Partners, spouses, kids, roommates, whether it's who's making dinner again or who left all those dishes on the counter, let us know how it's going in your household. Email us. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. And Nicole and Tom, right back to our listeners. Vicki is on the line. Hi, Vicki. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to reiterate the same thing that last caller said about having his college student home, and I have that as well, and it has been fabulous. Of course, we've had like little spats here and there, which are normal, but it's been super great. We've done lots of things together, and he too works as a central employee at his job, and they have been mandatory masks since day one. So I've been pretty feeling okay about his safety, and it's been really great for him to be able to get out of the house, because I think that he would have gone bananas if he had stayed in the house this whole entire time, because he does miss his friends in college, and he does miss that kind of life. But it definitely seems like he's been pretty happy from being at home and being able to work and being with his sister. So it's been really great.
Oh, Vicki, it's great to hear from you. And I'm glad to hear from a couple listeners that there are silver relationship linings to this. Nicole, do you want to weigh in on what Vicki says?
Absolutely. And I'm also hearing a lot of what Vicki was saying and Andrew was saying about the joy of having, you know, older children coming back home. And once again, having that time to reestablish a connection that might not happen again once, you know, the older child launches from the home. And it's wonderful to see that families are actually being given this chance to re-engage, or having, as Tom was saying, you know, heart-to-heart conversations. It really is fortifying family dynamics, and also creating a different kind, or maybe a new family resiliency, which is really great.
Here's an email from Eli, who says, "My partner and I were both restaurant workers. I left the life 2 years ago to start a small business, but my partner remained. At the start of COVID, he was laid off for 2 months, and I found that in that time, he really respected the COVID guidelines and took social distancing seriously. Since restaurants reopened and he's gone back to work, I've found he stopped taking things seriously as well. Eli says, it's become a real point of tension between us. I think the way the country and the state has just sort of thrown restaurant folks to the wolves has really affected his state of mind. It's almost like he doesn't care anymore, because clearly no one cares if he gets sick. I love my partner, but I'm scared of sharing a space with him." Eli, I'm glad you wrote. And Tom, I read a very frightening article in the Washington Post just this morning about people in Florida and other states where they've seen spikes of middle-aged and older people getting sick from younger people who are out and about working, socializing. And I just wonder how much you're hearing about this as a source of tension.
Well, I don't think we're hearing enough about it. If your partner is out and about, that really puts your life and your well-being at risk. And I think it's a matter for a real serious conversation, because how do they value you if they're willing to go out and about, go to work, not wear a mask? It's really a real issue of how do you care for me if you're not following the guidelines and you're working in an environment which is really very dangerous. So I would think that the caller should really have a serious conversation, because that's very dangerous for the relationship. Somebody not following the guidelines when the other person is.
Yeah, I'm struck by that last sentence there, Nicole. I love my partner, but I'm scared of sharing a space with him. Have you heard this from some of your clients, Nicole?
I have heard this from some of my clients, and some of my clients are actually, whom I do telehealth with, actually live in the South, where they're actually seeing giant spikes, and also working in the food industry as well. And a lot of giant spikes in the food industry. And so part of it, though, is people will have different responses to different situations. And so I think it's really important to communicate the fears and the concerns and have a conversation about how they can work together to maybe kind of mitigate some of their fears and concerns. And really working, they're in a relationship. So how can they work towards increased communication, increased intimacy, because I'm sure that is having, it's impacting all aspects of their relationship. So maybe coming from an angle of how can we work together to benefit our relationship so we can stay together in a relationship in which we're both healthy and happy.
Another source of disagreement around how different people judge the threats differently that I've heard a lot about, and I wonder what you're hearing, Tom, comes up with divorced parents, disagreements over safety protocols when there is shared child custody at the other parent's house. How much are you hearing about this, Tom?
Well, and when you have shared custody and kids are going back and forth, you always have it's potential for disagreement because the rules in one house are different than the rules in another house. And that's kind of understandable because people are different. But this is a life and death situation. This is something not to fool around with. So if you just consider the kids at the other house doing what they want, and then your child is now going to go over there for the next week because that's the custody arrangement, that's very dangerous, you know, and because that child is not only might get sick, but that child may bring it back to you. So it's really an issue of personal responsibility. And I think you as a parent need maybe to restrict that if you know that the other kids are, you know, going to parties, going to you know, meetups at different places. It's a very dangerous time. And I think that as a parent, you need to point out what those dangers are.
Nicole, last questions for you and Tom. And Nicole, to you first, what resilience have you seen with your clients, Nicole?
What I've seen and how resilience is taking form and shape is that we can't control what's going on in the outer world, but we can control our responses to what is going on in the outer world. We can control our perspective and we can control our perceptions. And so when someone is engaging in activities of increased self-care, that is a model of resilience. When they are showing emotional regulation, if they're able to have increased interpersonal effectiveness to express their concerns, and also recognizing too, which is also a form of resilience, is kind of, you know, where they might identify themselves as falling short, but being able to work on the areas in which they feel that they fall short.
So maybe a little more self-awareness, Nicole.
Certainly increased self-awareness. Absolutely.
Tom, how do you hope this whole giant social experiment we're in right now, you know, everybody kind of suddenly thrown together, might improve household dynamics in the future?
Well, that's a huge question. But what I'd like to maybe just say is, you know, a congratulations to all the parents out there and all the people who are really working their butts off to make families healthy and able to stay together. It is a thankless job. And the fact that I don't hear from you is great news because you're doing well. And we all want you to do well. We don't want you to have to seek, you know, help. But it's an amazing number of people. Most of the people are doing an enormous job of trying to parent. And if you're listening to this program, you have to be one of those parents who care. You tuned in because this was something about family living and family well-being, and you want to know more about it. You want to get more tips. So congratulations for tuning in. And I would maybe end with self-care is so important. I mean, when you hear on an airplane that stewardess say, put that mask on yourself first before the child. And you need to remember that because you have to, if you're the head of the family, if you're the one who's doing most of the work and you're listening to this program, you have to take good care of yourself because you're the engine. And self-care is really important, and particularly in this enormous job that's ahead of us. Wow. So congratulations for what you're doing. And I wish you well in continuing.
And I'm so glad that both of you were able to join us today. We've been talking with Tom Power, family relationship consultant based in Meredith. His book is Family Matters, A Layperson's Guide to Family Functioning, along with Nicole Sublette, licensed mental health counselor at a private practice in Concord. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its board of trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.